Donegal has some of the most beautiful gardens in the country and a rich tradition of garden making that stretches back to monastic times and spans the county from the Fannad Peninsula to Donegal Bay. But these gardens are much more than beautiful spaces. Behind neat hedges and through the flower borders hide 100 stories of our history, our garden making, and the magnificent obsessions that inspire people to make and maintain these Edens. My name is Mary Brophy, and I'm once again heading down the garden path to explore 6 more of Donegal's best-loved gardens. From a farmed landscape to private havens, in this second series, I'll be considering what it means to garden in a time of climate crisis and biodiversity loss.
You could actually smell the burning last year. I thought the geraniums would never come back again, you know, but they did.
And experience the stunning plants and trees that inhabit these spaces.
These are Scheffleras, so these are native to Taiwan. They're relatively new on the scene.
As I discover how we can create beautiful, productive spaces that work for both wildlife and people.
We have such little problems with pests. There is a balance. It's not a monoculture.
And how we might evolve our definition of what a garden is or can become.
Gardens can be absolutely anything your imagination wants them to be.
Today I'm by the coast at Rathmullen House, an 18th century gem first built as a summer retreat for Bishop Knox and then owned by a family of linen brokers and bankers until the early 1960s. In 1961, the Wheeler family bought Rathmullen and transformed it into a spectacular hotel and award-winning restaurant. But today I've come to see the restored walled kitchen garden that serves the hotel and restaurant. Through an ornate metal gate, I'm met by gardeners Esther Gustafsson and Martin O'Neill.
Now, Mr. Wheeler, when he bought the place, I think what I've understood, it was very wild in here. So after the years, he has been working with it and improving it. I think that apple tree and that apple tree might be originals.
The repair tree there, it's about 150 years old, so it's there quite some time.
So just as we came in that beautiful gate, there's a very obvious path directing us down the garden. And this apple tree is here on our left-hand side.
Well, here we have a little bit of a kitchen garden where we grow often brassicas and some curly kale. And I'm also trying quinoa.
Okay. Yeah.
See how it brand works. New product for us.
Yes.
Not a normal Donegal garden, but it's something new.
No. And we have on this side a lot of fruit bushes. Now, Mr. Wheeler is a keen jam maker. He is very keen on his berries. So there has been always a lot of berries in his garden. So these are raspberries. You have the currants over there. More autumn raspberries, so those are the summer ones. I tried some varieties that Mr. Wheeler was asking for, and they died back just the first year. Now, this new variety that I put here, this is Maling Leo. It's the only one that survived. Yeah.
And it's a raspberry.
It's a raspberry. Yeah, this is a summer raspberry. It's given a great crop. You have all sorts of stories happening. Lots of herbs as well. So we have the bay leaf, chamomile, chocolate mint. You see the wee square over there is a little herb garden.
Can we go up?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The bees are completely covering.
Oh, they're
covering.
So busy. They love this area.
Yes.
Yeah, and they love the oregano.
As we come up through the herb beds, I just realised this is a lovely seating area here. A perfect place to have it at the centre of the garden, surrounded by the herbs.
Yeah, people love to sit down here. Some people, they are here with their books or their newspapers and just relaxing. More mints, the spare mint and apple mint. Used a lot, both in the kitchen, but most the apple mint, I would say.
And are they used for teas or?
Yeah, teas, sauces, ice cream. They make ice cream of it.
Such a really nice idea though, raising the herbs all around, like elevating
so
it up.
Well, that's
yeah,
you sit within the herbs.
And then the you know, the insect life and stuff just right at your eye level.
Ear.
Yeah, exactly. ear and eye level. Perfect. Yes.
Gardens should be both pretty and productive.
Yeah.
You know, so people can walk in and see that it's nice looking, but also they've got to bring food into the kitchen.
Yeah.
That's kind of also primary role.
The kitchen garden is beautiful at this stage of summer, and so far it contains all the conventional produce you'd expect. Then we pass an intricate trained swirl of loganberries that offers a hint of Esther's creativity. And as we come to the top of the path, I begin to see how a kitchen garden feeding into a hotel and restaurant can also be a space for experimentation.
I have never seen this. What is that? It looks like a dark, almost like a basil leaf, but the most bizarre purple flower coming from it. It's like
it's an amaranth. The amaranths, as far as I know, are in the same family as the chard, spinach. So you can eat the leaves. We have young amaranth in a polytunnel for the salads. But the flowers are really nice as well. So you can eat the seeds, but you can also use the flowers for arrangements. So
tell us what are in these beds here now.
Swedes.
Celery.
This is a new one to us. We haven't grown before.
Salsify.
Right.
So it's the root sheet.
Really?
You know it. I show you in a polytunnel. It's like a white carrot nearly.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the flavor? Is kind
like oyster is what I've heard. And I've never tasted it. It was a chef asking for it. So I thought, okay, we'll try to grow. And it seems to go really well. So
far,
yeah.
And have they used it yet?
No. Yesterday I pulled the first root out because I wanted to see... is it about ready to take into the kitchen? It looks pretty nice.
Not good enough. Yeah.
So I can show you later.
Yes, we're seeing it. I'd be really curious to see that. And your Swedes, they're like, how large would you leave them before you harvest them?
I want them a little bigger than that. You see that there, kind of not larger than a tennis ball.
Right.
They're a little small yet.
But you're not going to go to the big.
No, I don't want
turnip
head size.
Turnip.
No, I don't want that size.
Yeah.
Well, slightly bigger than what they are.
Because baby Swedes can be just a little sweetness to them. They're not anything.
We grow small turnips as well, Tokyo and Snowball.
Okay.
And so they'll go on quite small that size. Yeah. I want them to be a little bit bigger.
If the salsify is popular, then maybe that's a crop we should grow more of later on. So it's trying out. So yeah, because we are growing things that you can't get in the shops. A lot of things. So it's nice for the chefs to have that, and then they can order in. That's more common.
Yeah.
But
also chefs would use things that a regular home cook won't necessarily know of or use or be trying flavors.
Yeah.
And to be able to experiment here in the garden, to have one bed devoted to that, it gives them time.
That can work against you because we have chefs in there from Bangladesh and they assume that we can grow certain things. We simply can't grow.
Okay.
And so I was trying to convince them that we live in Donegal and it's quite far north and growing season is quite short.
Yes.
So they may give you seeds for gourds and bottle gourds.
Yeah.
But will they work or not?
Yeah.
Esther came to Rathmullen as head gardener in 2016 and was joined by Martin 2 years ago. He brings with him a particular perspective.
I enjoyed my life in catering. I was a chef all my life. I was self-employed for the last 13 years. I did enjoy it. But you also get to a stage beyond 45 when it gets harder and harder to be a chef. It's long hours on your feet. And I was always interested in horticulture anyway. I have a small allotment in Letterkenny. So I grew bits and pieces there. So I enjoyed that side of kind of kitchen work. And so although it's a big transition, it's also part of the same field almost, it feels like.
Same cycle.
Yeah, so it's not that far of a step, actually. And I enjoy this work, although it's hard work, it's physical work, you're still working at a pace you're fit to work at.
It's less stressful.
Yeah,
here.
It's much less
you
stressful.
You do physical work, but it's not the same stress.
I got the job here because I was volunteering down here over the lockdown, just to give myself something to do. Yeah, again, it was work that I enjoy doing. And then when a position came up, I just put my name in the hat.
Yeah.
So another thing I'd actually really enjoy doing as well is I'm able to go into the kitchen and I'm able to ask them what they want and have a rough idea of how they want it as well because of the catering background.
Yeah.
And the fact the chefs know they've got a catering background, they're kind of, they're quite honest with me.
So.
Well, I'm Dutch, but when I was 20, I moved to Sweden, and there I've mostly been working as a youth leader, a preschool teacher. And I came here with my girls, and when they were at a certain age, I felt I really want to do something new. And I looked at all sorts of courses, and when I saw horticulture, I was like, yeah. I'm a city girl, but I just knew that when I'm outside, I'm really happy. And I always love plants and looking at plants nearby, and I love food and fresh fruits particularly. So when I saw the course horticulture, it just fell in place like a puzzle, and it's like, yes, this is it. And I loved it. I loved it, and I still love it. It's the best thing I've ever done. Yeah, best decision I ever made, I think.
So we're just coming into the polytunnel now. Wow. All the tools here.
The tools, yeah.
Please do not pick anything. Okay, I promise I'll try not to. So this is the salsify.
Of course,
yes, that's it.
It is, yeah. It's a kind of like a carroty celeriac, isn't it? Yes.
It does, yeah. It looks like it. When you see the flower coming, it's more like a dandelion.
I'm Mary Brophy, and in today's episode of Down the Garden Path, I'm in the walled kitchen garden of Rathmullen House, originally built in the 1760s as a country retreat. Head gardener Esther Gustafsson and gardener Martin O'Neill are giving me an expert tour, and we've just come into the polytunnel.
Now, we grow salads in succession all the time, so a lot has been harvested there now, so I've sown a new lot today there. They grow pretty fast.
How long will it take to get them to reach maturity now for harvesting?
Maybe 3 weeks.
Really?
4 weeks, almost, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Really? So you're in rotation from what, the beginning of May?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Through.
Oh yeah, it goes all through the season like that. So maybe every 2 weeks new salads are planted.
Yeah. And a lovely healthy crop of tomatoes beginning to ripen here, and I'm sure some have already ripened.
You brought in quite a few today already. And yesterday actually.
This is all Songold over here. They love Songold, the chefs.
This popular hotel is home to an award-winning restaurant, The Cook and Gardener. Rathmullen House also hosts functions like weddings that use huge amounts of fruits and vegetables. So in practical terms, this one-acre garden cannot supply the kitchen with everything it needs. But in certain crops like salads, a crop that when supplied through retail has a large carbon footprint, they are self-sufficient through summer at least.
We supplement,
that's it. That's what's ready in the season. Now, for example, the rhubarb, the berries, they're all picked, they're all prepared, and they're all frozen, so they can use it through the year. So if there is an abundance of a crop, it will be processed, so it will be available.
So you're getting it fresh in season, but you can still have it accessible right at the kitchen as well.
Well, I know even through the summertime, we're probably self-sufficient in lettuce.
Yes.
Lots of those types
Absolutely.
Of things. Yeah, we're supplying them almost all summer long with lettuce. Yeah. They were saying even a lot of the berries that were freezing down, they're using them in the bar as cocktails, like crushed berries, which is a nice idea.
Herbs are very important for the kitchen. So a big amount of herbs go into the kitchen. That's why you would see a hedge of rosemary there. And there is such a demand for it, so we need a lot of bushes, a lot of herbs.
And you need armfuls of it.
Armfuls,
definitely. And now, just as we come to the end of the tunnel, we have the most glorious vine.
Black Hamburg. Yeah,
and the grapes are quite small at the moment.
Still small. You see that they're turning to color in color now. It's a fantastic vine. It gives us a lot of grapes.
Yes.
And last year, one of the chefs has been making...
Maris was making wine?
Yeah.
From this vine?
Yes, from this very vine. Yes. Now, we have yet to taste any of Maris's wine.
Not yet.
So I'm hoping at some point he'll offer a glass.
Is Maris keeping it for himself? But you definitely don't want the blackbird getting in here now.
Well, that's why we have the netting there, and very soon we have to make sure there are no holes, because the blackbird is so bold. I mean, when he knows if there is something tasty in here, he brings all his friends as well, and then it will be full of blackbirds in here.
I got sage and a bit of bay leaves.
Chef Michal Harley joins us in the garden to gather some herbs for tonight's dishes in both the restaurant and the pizza pavilion here at Rathmullen. He first tells me how the chefs keep a close eye on the fruit and vegetables developing in the garden through the seasons, looking for things to inspire new flavour combinations or seasonal dishes.
Now we would come around, have a look around, see what's coming on, you know, for maybe next month. The figs are starting to come now close. The pears maybe come in the start of September. And there's still some more rhubarb, make more tarts and stuff like that. And then there's pumpkins coming then in October. So wee things, just looking around, kind of thinking ahead.
And how often are you changing your menu?
Daily.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're coming up with a brand new menu every day?
Every day.
So it's very responsive then in terms of what's in the kitchen and all those other things you can add.
Yeah.
I mean, cool. Esther and Martin were saying to us that it's not, the kitchen garden is not supplying you with everything you need.
No, but no, you get a lot of stuff here.
Yeah, but is it because you're not trying to get all the basics here that you get all the little gems that gives you something that can...
Yeah, especially with the menu changing, you know, especially for that one night. There might be only stuff for that night, and then a couple of days later, that stuff's reappearing again. You know, it's growing, the courgettes, that they're coming. You go out, pick them, and they get big. You might wait a few days, same with the spinach. Different you might have to, or Martin say, look, the lettuce there, give it a few more days, and then we go out again. Everything's just refreshing, so.
Yeah. But are you also getting ingredients that you wouldn't necessarily be able to get easily from a supplier?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And how does that influence your menus? Like
the low artichoke there will be coming. We put that maybe in a starter dish, maybe in the salads, and even downstairs we put a special in the pizza, you know, conjure up something. Yeah. So. Even the gooseberries here, like you wouldn't get them everywhere, no. Yeah. Different wee tarts, and even for we had on the pizza one time as well.
One thing that's coming up a lot is our carbon footprint and what an impact that's having. Mm-hmm. And the restaurant trade gets, you know, a lot of focus on that too, because it's a huge energy sucker and it's like it's changing all the time, a lot of food waste, etc. Like how is that coming into your thinking now in terms of designing menus and using more from the kitchen garden? Like
certain food like we that probably come September into the winter, we wouldn't use just because it's not in season. We would use stuff what's in season here. Like there'd even be a lot of apples, just because I wouldn't buy in like passion fruits or stuff like that. Stuff that's, you know, so far away to get. You know, keep it as local, like the pears there, even the berries, all summer we keep here. We'll freeze them down and then we'll use them then as the winter comes on, instead of buying them in. You know, people like their berries even the winter time, but they're not coming from here.
And I heard you use them in cocktails too.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's even better. What's on the menu tonight then, that's coming from here?
Tonight, well, I'm actually downstairs tonight in the pizza, but we're doing kale from the garden and the courgettes. We'll make them with black pudding and like an apple drizzle. So that's the special for the pizza tonight.
Give me that, are you putting that on a pizza?
Yeah. So it's like char grilled courgettes and then the kale, black pudding, the tomato base with the mozzarella, and then like a wee apple sauce on top.
Sounds amazing. Who came up with that idea?
We've done it probably a few months ago, and then there's courgette came in this morning, so we were like, right. And then there was broccoli on the last week, so we've changed that now, but a kale.
Does a kitchen garden at your doorstep, in a way, pressure is the wrong word, but does it focus you to be more creative because you want to use everything?
It does, yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah. You're thinking stuff that you probably you wouldn't buy in, but it's here, and you're like, right, I have to do something or kind of come up with creative thinking.
Michal, will you please come in and have a look at our Salsify? We have just dug one up.
Oh, class.
Yeah, so we've been trying now the Salsify, mm-hmm. and it looks pretty good. We don't know if all of them looks good like that, but It's getting there, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm quite happy with that.
Have you? I know Maria says you said. Have you used it before?
We have, yeah. We do eat salsa bay chips and stuff like that with it, and we puree mostly with steaks and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't buy that in too often, too. Like expensive, like.
I also decided now I will try to grow saffron. So I've ordered a lot of bulbs. So that's my other experiment that's coming up. See how that works.
You are interplanting flowers with fruit and veg.
Yeah, but also for the reason for flower arrangements.
But does the combination of both together change how you viewed flower arranging? That you could add maybe something like a mint in flower?
I use a lot of mint. Yeah. No, I use a lot of fennel, I use mint. You see the oregano flowers are really pretty.
Yes.
So I use them. I know they actually make a mess and don't last that long, but I do still use them. Even the lavender.
Yeah.
But I use a lot of mint.
But like
mint
an apple
actually,
mint in flower is so
amazing.
High and it's lovely.
The color is so nice and bright.
Yeah.
It's actually one of my favorite leaves because, you know, the foliage.
Yes. But it gives this lovely airy quality to an arrangement as well.
It does.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
I think it makes you think differently about flower arranging.
And the smells that come with it. And we have a lot of a sweet pea. Well, they don't last long. It's maybe one or two days.
Yes.
But it's very fast to pick them. And then I put them in a vase and put them here and there in the hotel. And there's this lovely smell coming of it.
Yes.
But and then the little bud vases on the table, they sometimes contain some of the sweet pea, some of the lavender. I could use the oregano and then some mint, and then you have a whole explosion of smells. So a lot of people say, "Oh, you can smell the flowers, you know, and the herbs."
Does that draw them into the kitchen garden? I mean, as we're talking here now, there are some of the guests just wandering around enjoying the afternoon sunshine.
It is.
It's a really, really lovely spot to spend, like 10 minutes or half an hour wandering around, you know. So if I was on holidays here, I'd want to walk around here.
Absolutely. Mm. And I'm sure it's become an attraction.
That was kind of part of my thinking. I think the garden should be both like productive and pretty. So if you can have it, we're still bringing in crops, but it looks nice to be in as well. So it's not just utilitarian, which it could be, but it's soft and it's pretty and it's a nice spot.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And do you find then that in terms of horticulture and pollinating your plants and stuff like that, that having that really nice generous mix is drawing in all of your pollinators?
It has to be a benefit. You know,
I think we have such little problems with pests or aphids, all that, nearly nothing.
And that's why.
That is because there is such a variety of plants, which the flowers probably draw in a lot of different insects as well, and they there is a balance. It's not a monoculture.
From pears in flower in early spring right through the summer, and ivy draping the tops of these venerable old walls flowering into winter, there is a pollen source for pollinators throughout the year. This has been a fascinating visit to a kitchen garden that is working on so many levels. I'm inspired by a garden that is always striving to be creative and excellent, spurred by an equally creative culinary team in the kitchen. It demonstrates how, instead of a supermarket shelf, our gardens can be the source of delicious luxury foods, minus the guilt of carbon food miles.
Most people should be fit to have a go at it. Like, if we can grow figs and Donegal, there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't be growing, you know, the basics.
But perhaps most importantly, this kitchen garden embodies an idea. How we're just one part of an interdependent ecosystem, which is healthiest and at its most brilliant and productive when it is most biodiverse. Something we can all replicate, no matter how big or small our gardens might be.
I bought my first fig 2 years ago.
Really?
And it's really done well. Like, it's come from, you know, there to there in a year. So I'm just trying to wait for the walled garden to be built for me to put the fig into.
That's the next thing. What a dream.
Next time on Down the Garden Path.
It's a slow decline. And particularly in some species like the green-veined white, you would only count about 30 maybe when you would have had 200 before.
Down the Garden Path is written and presented by Mary Brophy and produced by Neil Boyle. It is an IWR media production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.